Santa Cruz. How you feeling? Welcome to the Cannabis Connection. I'm your host, Christopher Carr. Thank you for tuning in to another edition of Santa Cruz Fungi Radio. We're getting fun tonight. We're getting fungi. Humboldt Fungi in the house. Big ups. So excited to jump in. This is a very interesting topic of discussion. It's something near and dear to my heart. I just found an article, and we might reference that, but this was intuitive for me, but the relationship of cannabis and ethnogens, and specifically the relationship to the sacred mushroom. Something's been very, very kindred spirits of things. And as we look at the drug policy change and decriminalized nature and all these interesting developments in the Bay Area and Northern California and the Central Coast, I thought this would be a really interesting discussion. I'm very honored and excited to speak with Humboldt Fungi, Craft Fungi from the heart of Humboldt County. Welcome to the Cannabis Connection.
Hey, what's going on, Chris? How's it going? I appreciate you having me on.
Yes, I thank you for joining us. Can you tell us where specifically in the world you're calling in from?
I'm calling from northern Humboldt County.
Righteous. Is that your roots, or how did you find yourself?
No. Originally from the Midwest, and I came out here, I think like a lot of people do, for the cannabis world. That was like my heart. And then coming out here and meeting all these amazing people with so much passion and love and doing what they believe, not because the law says it's okay, but they believe it in their heart. And to just feel that energy, you know, brought me out here and made me want to stay.
Righteous. Well said, man. Thanks for that sentiment. Yeah, that's a fascinating the answer the call, right? Many are called, chosen are a few, and you made the pilgrimage. It's really interesting to see that pattern with people coming on the show and how they came out to felt drawn to it, right? And that relationship, obviously, to cultivating in Northern California has very deep roots.
No, absolutely. It's literally like, for me, Humboldt's like the most magical place I ever been. For one, like the people are the most like resilient, incredible people that you'll ever meet. But then being from the Midwest, I had never really been to like the forest like that. We have forests out there, but it's nothing like out here, you know, going to the Avenue for the first time, seeing the redwoods and experiencing that. It really kind of changed my life, and I was like, well, this is where I have to be, obviously, you know?
Yeah.
And then from there, coming up to the coastal forest and being under all the Sitka spruce and then finding all the, you know, really ended up just falling in love with mushrooms out here. It wasn't anything I expected. My whole focus since, you know, I was young was just been cannabis. So.
Wow, how amazing. So these forests of the Emerald Triangle, specifically when the Lost Coast, Humboldt, you fell in love. I love the way you said that. It's well said. In many ways, it's kind of part of the journey sometimes is just to go with what feels right. And can you speak to those early days and how you built your relationship with mushrooms out in these forests? And I love the way you describe the different types of forests, and you mentioned Avenue of the Giants for a lot of people that might be familiar, for some maybe not, and maybe just break down these not only redwood forests but these coastal forests. I love the way you put that, and these first encounters, how you developed that love for mushrooms.
Yeah, well, you know, after coming out here, I originally was down in southern Humboldt and just going out to the redwoods and spending as much time as possible, any free time I had, just exploring new spots and exploring the forest and just feeling like a kid, you know,
yeah.
And feeling really like peace for the first time in my life, to be honest. Just being out there, it was like really like therapy, you know.
Yeah.
And then what's interesting with the redwoods is, There's definitely some mushrooms down on the Avenue. There's some like beautiful hygrosobes, which are like these bright red and yellow wax cap mushrooms, and those will be in the dust in the redwoods. But really, when I came up north for the first time and came up to the coast, that was when I just started seeing mushrooms everywhere, you know. And that there's like a whole different forest up north here. So it's interesting, the diversity in these different microclimates and also these different tree associations between the fungi and the trees, right?
That mycelium relationship, is that on point? Like, yeah, what you mentioned with microclimates, and that, I think that is fascinating. That what's fascinating for the local audience, Santa Cruz Mountains, there's some powerful Big Basin, there's some powerful, we had that fire a couple years back, so we've lost some of those old growth redwood zones, but you can still find some big giants out in Santa Cruz, but there's such diversity too. I think it's fascinating to think about. I would love to go deeper there, learning about, you know, your thoughts about, yeah, the different terroirs and how the mycelium relationship kind of reflect these different zones in Humboldt County.
No, absolutely. And I think you got Santa Cruz is like an epic mushroom place. I haven't got to explore much down there, but there's a book called Mushrooms of the Redwood Coast. A lot of people might have it. And if you don't have it and you're in Santa Cruz area, or really anywhere in the Pacific Northwest, it's going to be like a Bible, like a great field guide to being able to start to identify all these mushrooms. And a lot of the photos are from Santa Cruz all the way up to Humboldt, you know?
Wow. Yeah. So,
yeah.
Yeah. There's a powerful, there's a society. We have the Mushroom Fair. It's a cultural heritage point. There's some deep, Thursday nights I'm in Boulder Creek. I do radio two nights a row in two different parts of Santa Cruz. Tonight we're right here in Portola, right by the water, right by the ocean. But I do love going deep into the San Lorenzo Valley, and that is a notorious spot after the rains. I have my other book that I love to share about books and to kind of give those seeds out to the people listening, All That the Rain Promises and More. That's kind of a classic.
That's definitely a classic.
But yeah, for sure, the Mushrooms of the Redwood Coast, that's something
definitely
that...
Definitely, like, for our area, that's like... All the Rain Promises is amazing, and that, like, that everyone should have that book. But there's a lot of mushrooms in there that we don't have here.
That's good.
It can narrow it down a little bit when you have the Mushrooms of the Redwood Coast, because you're not seeing things that kind of look like it, but they're from the East Coast. You know?
Yeah, well, yeah, for sure. Yeah, that's really important. And so when foraging, obviously, or just mushroom hunting, right, can maybe break down, I mean, the process is pretty simple, but maybe for a novice just listening in, obviously a field guide is crucial. What other key things that you can advise, right? Because this is important. You got to respect the mushrooms.
Got to respect the mushrooms. But we also, what we have to end is like mycophobia, which is a fear of mushrooms.
100%. And like, yes.
At least growing up, like my mom, I'd be out. My mom would be like, don't touch that mushroom, right? And it's like, well, there's not any mushrooms that you touch that are gonna kill you, you know what I mean? So it's don't be scared to go pick up a mushroom, go pick it, look at it, start to notice certain features, check out the underside of the mushroom. Does it have gills? Does it have pores? You know, and what really I started doing was, after I came up to the coast, I would just get like a little fishing, like a tackle box, right? And I would start collecting the mushrooms I find and just put them in the tackle box, right? And then take those home to research and try to figure out what they are, you know? And there's like a few amazing tools that we have now with like the internet and everything. One of the biggest tools we have is iNaturalist. It's an app where you can go on from like a PC, right? And with iNaturalist, what you can do is you can upload photos of the mushrooms, and then there's mycologists from all around the world that will come on and help you identify those mushrooms, right?
Wow, fantastic, yeah.
Yeah, and so what you'll want to do is you'll want to get a few different photos. You'll want to get a photo of the mushroom in its natural habitat, right? Like where it's at, if there's any trees or any indicators around there. Then you'll want to carefully take the mushroom out of the ground and try not to break the end of the stem, which is like referred to as the spike, right? You want to keep that intact.
Yes.
And you want to get a photo of the mushroom kind of laying sideways with the full body. And then you want to get one of the underside to see if there's gills or pores or teeth. And with those three photos, you can really break down and figure out what the mushroom is with just those three style of photos. So it's always good if you're trying to identify a mushroom to do those. You can also bisect it. You can cut it in half, right? And see does it show any staining of any colors? Is it, these are features that the identification books will, you know, mention dark staining blue or whatever it may be, right? So it's like, cutting it in half is another thing you can do. And on top of that, if you're having trouble, it's always good. You can make spore prints. If you're like trying to figure it out, and then by the color of the spore print might indicate, what's going on. But the next, like the true level of like what's going on now is, people are collecting these mushrooms and sequencing the DNA because a lot of them look somewhat similar. But there might be a whole new like variety it looks similar, but it's a little bit different, right? So we're starting that's kind of like the new wave, is like being able to start sequencing all the DNA and then be like, oh, well, this isn't popping up in anything we've found before, right? So it's like there's a good chance that's something new.
Which is pretty amazing to be a part of something. Yeah, of a discovery of what's right here in our forest.
Yeah.
It's humbling to think of the amount of diversity and to come to the realization we don't really know that much. Nature's wild still.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. And, like, it's cool that this is happening all over the world. They're starting to sequence now. There's, like, I think they're, like, $1,000. You can get, like, mini PCR.
Oh my gosh, they're using the PCR tests. Okay.
Right. So with that tool, you can sequence, you can extract the DNA, right?
Yeah.
And then sequence it as well. Or you can barcode it. I'm sorry, barcode the DNA.
So, okay.
That's not something I know too much about. I want to just be, I'm not like a
no worries.
Expert.
Yeah,
but
no,
I think
that's
kind of like the final frontier of being able to identify something as that sequencing.
Yeah. What's interesting, because cannabis has had its day in Phylos Bioscience and the shift of...
A little scary, right?
Yeah, totally scary, man. Kind of unfortunate. We've been, once again, humbled, right? It's still just like, whoa. But there's two sides to all things, you know, and especially with technology and these tools, just to keep the intention pure. And what I've listened and heard is there's a community element and through leveraging technology like iNaturalist and what you just helped educate me and the whole audience, everyone that will listen to this later, is the, you know, the best way to kind of document, photograph, those three key approaches kind of fulfill a lot of the criteria to identify or to at least upload on a space, even IG. That's how I found you. That's how we have many mutual friends, you know, on Instagram. It's a wonderful way to, it's easy to do what you described on Instagram, just the adding of photos in a bit of a lineup. But I love this app and giving it to the experts, right? And they're all over the world. But fascinating, because I know in these not competitions, but there is a developing trend of conferences and gatherings. Okay. And would love to hear a little bit all of, we've had our mutual friend Reggie on.
Oh, dope.
Yeah, and would love to hear your thoughts on, like, you know, this really amazing ability to, and Hyphae Labs is something I see fascinating here. I'd love to hear your thoughts on these new opportunities to build community around mycology and sequencing.
I think it's incredible. It's incredible to meet. I mean, Reggie's introduced me to some epic people, and I'm, like, forever grateful for that, you know, and through those conferences and
yeah.
stuff. I've definitely expanded my relationships and met some super dope people. So I think they're good. I do start to see, you know, just like with cannabis, a lot of the kind of like Chad bro or whatever vibe.
Yeah,
like
unfortunately.
With their suits on and they're, okay, we're going to do it like cannabis and we're going to name the strain Relax and it's going to be in the shiny, you know, it's just
oh,
like.
Oh no, really? Already?
Like,
the corporatization
yeah,
of it?
Yeah, there's already some, I don't want to say any names, but there's some big nutrient companies or cannabis company, we'll just say cannabis, big cannabis people that are now like just diving into the mushroom world. So
okay.
That's kind of interesting to see and like, so I'm that part of it makes me a little nervous, man, because I every day I'm seeing like my great friends and amazing farmers that put everything into it losing out just because of the way the whole Prop 60,
yeah.
Prop 64 or whatever was designed, you know.
Well said.
I hope we can avoid that. The goal is to avoid that.
Agreed. And, yeah, I feel
yeah.
That was a topic at the Harvest Ball last year. I don't know. I wasn't able. I did the Small Farms Initiative at the Emerald Cup. But, you know, at these other cannabis events, you see people in the campaigning for legalizing psilocybin. But it's kind of like a Prop 64. We just need to learn our lesson from the past, the recent history, and not repeat the same mistakes. I think a lot of what we're looking at with is this decriminalized approach, at least, and having a really united front. These, what you mentioned about Reggie, and I love you know, Phoebe, and it's just like it's a really nice close-knit community. Obviously, it's obviously interwoven being in Northern California and the Bay Area, and of course Santa Cruz and Central Coast is kind of a part of this bigger vortex of relationships and families and friends coming together at different events. But yeah, we really need to just be involved in what's happening, because I do feel there's a hunger that people want to learn more about what we're talking about. I've learned a lot about identification, about documentation, some really great pro tips with the tackle box, which is it's just a great idea to collect samples. This is the scientific method. It's also, I see that you're a Humboldt Bay Mycological Society member, and so there's these existing groups.
Everyone should, if you're interested in mushrooms, especially I know down in Santa Cruz, I believe you guys have a mycological society.
Yes.
We have one up here. There's a group in Mendo that's somewhat like a mycological society that I know about. And so it's like, meet some of your local mushroom people. And, it sounds like the word mycological society sounds like, whoa, that's kind of like heady or whatever, but like, don't be afraid to reach out and try to go to some meetings. A lot of them have forays, which is like, for anyone that doesn't know, it's like you guys get together and go out in the forest and kind of go mushroom hunting as a group and then bring the mushrooms back and place them all out and like identify the mushrooms. That's like really helped me, just being a part of the mycological society and going to the forays and trying to be involved, going to the meetings, you know, like that's, it's like $15 a year to be a member. And like meet awesome people from all over it's like the most diverse mushrooms, are like the most diverse crowd, you know, it's like,
yeah, you're right. Yeah.
So it's like you meet great people and you get to start learning and building your education, and you'll start figuring out the edible varieties that you're interested in. Maybe some of them you don't like, maybe some you do, you know?
Yeah. I remember we had ice cream and there's a whole culinary piece
candy
of the
cup.
Yes, that's exactly right. Exactly right. Yeah. We went to this.
It's incredible, right?
It's incredible. It's so. Of course, and this is a timely topic because there's more people thinking about plastics and pollution and trash and climate change, and we can learn a lot from nature and find ways to find ways to align with nature and instead of being the next wave of chads just doing the same commodification of sacred experiences, you can protect the sacred and align with nature and maybe find ways to remedy this packaging problem in the cannabis space or plastic packaging in general. Hemp, mycelium, there's potential there. There's obviously a lot of research and these are just brainstorming ideas. But yeah, the further we deepen our knowledge, I think that's the better approach. Very exciting stuff. Yeah, there are certainly wonderful groups here in town. One thing, though, I would like to learn about is, do you have experience? This is something that I grew up in El Dorado County, so like gold country, and being deliberate and inoculating things in nature, because a lot of people, obviously, I would love to hear your thoughts on like foraging, but also cultivating mushrooms in nature, if that's a possibility, or is the lab necessary, or both? I'm curious just to learn about that and your thoughts on that.
Yeah. So, the thoughts on cultivating.
Yeah. Like inoculating naturally, like not.
If you're going to be inoculating like a natural stuff, then like I would recommend doing like wood logs, and you can
wood logs.
Yeah, you can do these dowel rods, right? Add your mycelium to the dowel rods, colonize those, and then you can plug the logs if you're wanting to do like a fully outside outdoor situation. And you can do that with shiitakes and with like a few different varieties. If you're looking for like doing something just like outside, up here we have the climate, and I think that area down where you guys are as well.
We have some areas that I think would be similar to Humboldt County for sure.
Yeah, we have cyanescens, which grow in the sand dunes out here as well as in wood chips. Right?
Oh, yes, that's right. Yes.
So there's a few varieties. So you can put the wood chips out here, right? And then have like a fully outdoor cyanescens. They call them like wavy caps.
Yes.
You can have like a full little like outdoor situation, which basically comes from the rain, you know?
Yeah. That's so cool.
Pretty cool. I haven't played around with that yet, but this year I'm like getting everything prepared. It seems like around November they start to pop out on the coast and the dunes.
Okay,
so
yeah, that's
try to have everything going before then and be able to just throw out the wood chips and just see what happens.
Nice. Yeah, it's interesting. We've had BioVortex on and he was inoculating his garden beds. This is a long time. We were 2017 maybe when he came on, or maybe even 2015 when we first started. He was one of our first guests on the radio.
That's pretty cool. I was just hanging out with him like 2 days ago.
Oh, right on. Yeah, Jesse, he's got roots in Santa Cruz, and It's just, yeah, the whole BioVortex art project and lifestyle is pretty inspiring, and the incorporating that into your garden is something, I think, with intention, obviously, because mushrooms grow in living soil all over. I need to...
Yeah. So for like a garden situation, you would want to... A lot of people had wine caps.
Cool.
Which is like a spiraria, right? You can inoculate your garden with straw or however you're going to, whatever you're putting it onto, and then add that straw into your garden, right, after it's colonized. But what I'm trying to do this year is collect a local spiraria. It's not a wine cap, but it's one that grows up this way. And
nice.
Start giving that to some local farmers so they have like a local spiraria that is...
acclimated. Yeah. Like indigenous.
Just to see the difference, and maybe do some like wine cap beds and some of the local strafferia we have here.
I love that. Yeah, that's something that I think is, we used to forage for like mycelium in the oak duff and throw that in when we transferred ganja, and or just in the mix, right? In super soil, kind of heady approach to building soil or hugel culture, making the mounds. Yeah, it's always wonderful to find what's around you, right, and be intentional in how do I facilitate this and keep it going, but bring it in too and welcome it into the soiree that is a living garden, living soils.
Yeah. And when you're out in the forest foraging for any mushrooms, it's always a good practice if you're going to cut off the mushroom butts. You can kind of bury those or spread them around.
Okay, nice. So you're propagating a little or helping steward the process.
Yeah, and the same if you're finding those cyanescens in like a wood chips. What you want to do is you can always spread. You can kind of, you'll see the mycelium under the mushrooms, and you can kind of spread that around a bit. And then it's just going to come back stronger when you spread it around, you know?
Yes. Yes. There's a great story. I'll be really quick. A friend, Elder, wrote a book. He's been on the show a few times. I won't name drop him specifically, but I'll name his book, Alcohol Can Be Gas. He's big into growing turmeric, and it has a really strong starch content, and he makes alcohol from the, so you grow the crop. It's a very healthy crop. It's at the health food shops all around town, but then he's got these stills and this crazy alcohol setup where he makes this really strong alcohol that you could run your tractor on it, right? That was kind of the idea back in his day, was trying to move away from petro and give a manual on how you can become self-sufficient in aligning. But during that time, you know, he lived in Berkeley in the East Bay and was really into the wavy caps and inoculated all these, because a lot of the groundskeepers in Golden Gate Park, you know, they love the wood chips. And he was doing exactly a similar process. And then they just went bonkers. It grew so well. You know, some rain came and it was just off and everyone was stoked. He was a little like Johnny Appleseed of wavy caps for Golden Gate Park.
No, I'll see every once in a while, I'll see a friend out riding around on their bike, hitting different spots with wood chips. And it's like, oh, you're like a mushroom angel.
Little angel, just spreading the love. Yeah, that was his big thing. And he had some cool ideas of putting, just the wood chip in, like, in between rows in the greenhouse when you grow ganja. So you have the wavies. Yeah, you just put the wavies with in these rows, in these living soil beds, and see what happens. It was kind of a fun. We had a couple sit downs, a couple good meetings. Nothing really other than that, but I learned that great story of he just inoculated Golden Gate Park. It was his mission. He had so much fun doing it.
Yeah, well, shout out to all the people riding around and dumping.
The angels, yeah.
Chips, you know?
The wavy cap angels.
Yeah.
That's righteous. No, and is, can you speak to, like, your thoughts on building the relationship and having a humble setup, maybe not in nature, right, for your hobbyist and growing mushrooms for yourself, right? That's a big part
of
this.
Yeah, I think everybody, I feel like, kind of thinks that growing mushrooms is this, like, impossible, or it's, like, so hard, and I
it's
just
somehow daunting.
It.
Yeah, I think it intimidates a lot of people. Even myself, I've taken some courses, I've had some great conversations with some amazing people like Reggie, like yourself, like my friend that wrote this book. But would love to hear your thoughts on how to get over that hump. It's kind of like this other weird hang up.
Yeah, right. Well, I think the number one things that happens is people get discouraged, right? Because there's some of the work you got to do in a clean space, right? So having some type of flow hood or with the HEPA filter is like the ideal situation to do the clean work. But you can also make like what's called a still air box, just out of like a tub. And basically you're working in a sealed tub with holes for gloves, right? But some of the work does need to be clean. So what can happen is people can get a contamination. If they don't quite have like the flow hood, maybe the first time they'll have some contaminate, and then they get discouraged, right? But the best advice is just keep doing the repetitions, right? You got to keep working on the grain, keep doing it, keep playing with agar or liquid culture, or just start doing it. Is the best thing I could say is just start playing around with it and start failing, because that's how we learn, right?
Yeah, so true. I definitely had issues indoor cultivating of cannabis, and it's important to get over those humps and learn, like anything, like playing music too took time, you know, build the calluses, playing guitar, you gotta get through it.
So don't be scared, and just go, you know, just like anything, there's a lot of bad information out there. So you want to, if you're going to be learning from someone or you're excited to learn, you want to make sure to find, kind of look around the community and find someone that you see that's doing it, what you want to do, right? Like, this person's having success, and maybe reach out to them and don't bother them like about every little thing, but maybe you have a few people that you feel like are doing what you want to do, and then you can ask each of those a little part here and there, and it's not so overwhelming like you're asking one person to show you the whole ropes. I have a really good friend, Wumbo Maiko, and he has a Patreon, and he's like one of the most knowledgeable people I know about growing. He's grown like every style, gourmet, large scale, small scale. And he has he's a really good person to follow, or maybe even have on here sometime.
It's
W-U-M-B-O, Maiko, just on IG. And I recommend, if anyone's trying to like learn, he literally has like step-by-step walkthrough videos of every single process, you know, and he really cares. So that's who I would recommend if someone's like wants just getting in and wants to have like a knowledgeable resource, just hit him up and join that Patreon, and you'll have access to every single step all the way up to like breeding mushrooms. You know,
wow. So, can you speak? I really appreciate that. I've learned a lot. I've taken notes. This has been helpful, and I can't imagine. Well, luckily it's recorded. I don't need to take notes, but it feels good to write things down and internalize things. And one thing, the flow, the box, the bin tech is something that I've been exposed to. And can you define what a flow hood is? Is that a very intense.
Yeah, so it's basically you have a HEPA filter.
Yes,
right?
Yes, which you can get at like Home Depot, or is this something more advanced than?
No, you would have to order them. A lot of people will order a 2-foot by 2-foot HEPA filter from eBay.
Okay, right? Got it. Okay, so it's
you can build a box around your HEPA filter. And then there's a fan that goes on top, right? And so it's blowing clean air out of the filter, and you're working in front of that HEPA filter.
And so it's blowing onto you working, or is it negative
it's
air pressure?
It's blowing like a stream of clean air. So yeah. When you're working in front of the filter, that's going to really help with any type of contamination.
Yeah, the trichoderma was the issue of my friends. Yeah, it was an issue. But that's okay, great. That's a really nice definition. Thank you for that. Yeah, so it's just kind of providing this this sea of cleanliness because of the airflow coming from through the filter, and you're operating
exactly.
Right up against that like body of cleanliness coming out of the airflow.
Yeah. So that's like the main investment. Like if you want to get into mushrooms, like you can always start with the still air box, and people have success with that. And
yeah.
You might have some contam more than others, but you might still have some success. But once you really get that flow, once you get the flow hood and you have that clean air, it changes the game. So that would be like a good, if you really want to get into this, maybe it's good to just make the investment into that.
Yeah, you know? That's good advice. Yeah, I've gone to classes. There was a great class at the Loudon Nelson Center here in Santa Cruz, very OG kind of community space, very special. Actually, the space where they hold the fungi fair. And I had a great experience. It was a wealth of knowledge. I feel like the educator put so much in. Sometimes you need like wumbo, little bits broken down over time. Build your. It's kind of overwhelming at first, but we all left with
definitely overwhelming, right?
Yeah.
So just start with one thing. Like if you get a flow hood, start just like playing with agar and just
nice.
Start messing with that and. You might have some fail or go bad, but just get the repetitions down, right? Get some grain.
That's really good. Yeah, get the grain. Yep.
Inoculating
the grain. Do you do it in jars or bags? What is your preferred approach?
I prefer bags for sure.
Got it.
Jars are great. Like if anyone's doing just like something for themselves, jars are
smaller, right?
Yeah. Right? But I'm trying to like hunt through a bunch of different genetics, and I always have a bunch of different things going. So like, for me, I go with the bags, right?
Nice.
But anyone on like a small level or smaller level would be like a good jars would be a good place for people to start. And then, oats, you can do oats or Milo, millet, those are some of the grains, but
nice.
Just start. Don't be scared to just like to try, and then when it fails, you're gonna learn each time, So it's best to just get in there and start practicing each little step, and you'll get good at it quicker than you probably think. It's not everyone kind of seems to like make it seem so difficult or like it's really like anyone can do it.
Give thanks. Yeah, good encouragement. Yeah, it would be nice to see more people at their mycological societies and getting involved in many ways. Social media has become a place of earth church, of taking care of the garden, but also of the body, of the heart and the mind, and building community through mushrooms. It's been really special to see. It's a positive thing in this time.
Well, it's cool, like if I see some friends in different parts of the world and they're foraging for things, I get excited to see mushrooms, especially ones like we don't have around here, it's
yeah.
It's pretty cool, and I love my favorite thing is just taking people to the forest that have never really experienced it that much, or maybe they're from the city or from New York or wherever. I have friends in town, you know, and like, it's like, let me just like show you something for a little bit. And it's like, no matter where they're from or how hard, how many neck tattoos or whatever, as soon as they get in the forest, they just turn into little kids when they start fighting mushrooms. You see the joy just like take over them. And that's like probably my favorite feeling.
It's like, exciting. It's exciting.
Serotonin hits, you know, of awesomeness. So that I love doing that. And like, regardless of IG or no IG, I've been in the forest for years just taking pictures of mushrooms before I was even into the cubes. I was just out there just like fascinated with the mushrooms and all their colors and textures and morphologies. And it's just like the coolest thing in the world to me, you know?
It is. Well, and what we opened with there's potential of discovery. There's potential of unknown. There's so much mycelium underneath our feet every step we take in the soil, especially these forests. It's such a sacred endeavor in a piece of our ecosystem. It's very important. It's very, very impressive too. I love to see your diversity of what you showcase. I see a lot of very special varietals and would love to hear your thoughts about what a lot of friends are doing with decriminalized nature. Here in Santa Cruz, we do have decriminalized in the city, and would love to hear your thoughts on the psychoactive, you know, the relationship of the psilocybin specific varieties. And I love that you put, I mean, are these, you're putting them out in nature, right? Or are you finding these?
I mean, don't kill all the magic.
I'm sorry. It's like, no, it is. It's amazing. It feels like, I was just like, oh my gosh, is he just the luckiest guy? Or is he growing these out there?
I like to make people think.
Yes, that's right.
Spark a reaction with someone that's like,
it's your art. It's beautiful art.
That's not real, you know, but also it's to encourage people to have fun. And I feel like a lot of people only like. Start learning about other mushrooms.
Can you see the last part one more time? You went on hold for some reason, but you're back.
The goal is, like, a lot of people are really into mushrooms because they like cute, or they like the psychedelics, right?
Sure.
So
yes,
what I'm trying to do is inspire those people to start learning about all the other mushrooms. So if I capture their attention with the psychedelics,
yes,
but then they see another mushroom in the photo, and I'm giving, like, the actual name of the other mushroom and sometimes the description, then they can learn about other mushrooms. And that's like kind of the goal. And then to have fun is always the goal.
Always. One. I'm loving this violet web cap that you found. And
That was one of my favorites.
It's a long time ago, 40 weeks. But it's art. It's such art to see how you put things together. Yeah, I really enjoy it. Super important. It's important. Yeah, like you said, keep the fun. Keep it alive.
Yeah, and just the whole goal is to inspire people, like, whether it's with the cubes or the psychedelics, or just to get out in the forest and don't be shy to take some mushrooms home and start figuring out what they are, because that's where all this started. You know what I mean?
Yeah, the tackle box. That's brilliant.
What are these?
Yeah.
You know, what do these do? Are these edible? Most of it, like, I had all these questions, and you slowly start to figure it out, you know, and then it's like more and more deeper and deeper. The web just keeps going deeper, and I just try to surround myself with, like, people that are way smarter than me and way better at foraging and identification. I just try to surround myself with those people and learn as much as possible, you know, because I'm not any type of mushroom expert at all. I just love the mushrooms.
Yeah, well said. That's true. I mean, that's the way. Can you speak on that Violet webcap, though? Just, I'm curious.
I just was going to say, that was like, that's been on my list for a while to find, right?
Sure. Stunning.
Last year, I ended up finally coming across it. And just like the vibrance of that Violet webcap in the forest, it was like the picture does not do it justice. It was like glowing, neon,
yeah.
Purple, slightly like not velvet, but the cap was just so, it was just like, that was one of my favorite mushrooms. I actually dehydrated it and I have it like dried out, but it's not very pretty anymore.
That's amazing. How cool. Yeah, what a stunning find. I mean, that's a lot of this still to be figured out as we go.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I just got back from the forest today with some friends, and we were crushing the lobster mushrooms, so that was pretty fun.
Oh, righteous. Nice. That's cool. Any pointers, like when you are in the forest, what, you know, how do you, is there any specific approach or especially with these groups in the 4A kind of, I thought that was interesting. You know, how does one be mindful when trying to identify wild work in the forest?
As far as being mindful or like,
or just like, how do you guys crush it? You know, like what's your approach or?
Oh. Well, I was with my friend. She's like a super forager.
Nice.
A professional forager.
Yeah.
She would be a good person to interview too. Her name's on IG is Elle Firefly.
Righteous.
But she's like, she just like is a crusher. And we went out and the lobsters right now are kind of like one of the main things really going off. It's like the end of lobster season. But with those, what you'll see is, you'll see what happens is it actually starts off as a different, a mushroom called the Russula brevipes, right?
Oh, wow.
It's like a white brittle gilled mushroom. And what happens is it gets parasitized by hypomyces, which is like a mold.
Okay.
It takes over this white mushroom and turns it bright orange and like, coats all the gills, and they're just crazy. I have some on the IG, like if you go down, but
okay,
they're
I'll
just
check.
Crazy bright orange, like forest lava looking specimens. And then when you take them home and cook them, it literally smells like lobster. Like your whole house will smell like seafood.
Yeah, the interior flesh looks white, but the exterior is forest lava. Vibrant.
Very
yeah,
vibrant.
Yeah, nacho cheese vibrant. Yeah.
Yeah, as they get older, they turn purple.
Whoa, that's cool.
People will use them. Yeah, they're like, they get squishy and old, but then people will use those to dye. It's like a mushroom dye.
Mushroom dye for anything, right? Or just tie-dye or just
no,
dye?
No. I have a friend, Liz, and she does all kinds of, she'll take all different varieties of mushrooms, and she has a book with, like, yarn of the dyed from each mushroom.
Oh, whoa.
And she can even, like, change the tint, like, the brightness of the colors by, like, pH.
Whoa.
It's pretty crazy. I took a dye class with her last year, and that just, like, opened my mind up to...
Yeah.
All kinds of stuff.
Yeah, this versatile approach to the many uses, right? Because it's also edible, very, very powerful. Yeah, this is a very humble fungi. It's officially lobster season. It's a nice, perfect little video of you. But you do have the underside as well documented. Yeah, it's fascinating. And them coming out of the ground. How cool. And it smells like seafood. That's fascinating. The relationship piece is so...
It tastes like seafood.
You can make some lobster tacos with lobster mushrooms.
Yeah, and they're good. It's crazy.
Yeah, it is. It's amazing, man. The the relationship.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to soon as Porcini season, so we have like King, Queen, Bolites.
Yeah.
And those are like, those are one of my favorites to find because they can get super giant, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, so it's just, and these seasons come with the rains, or is it just kind of evergreen in the forests?
Yeah, well, in like coastal areas, right? Like,
yes, with the marine layer.
We get fog grip.
Yeah.
That kind of keeps, at least there's at least something, it might not be like prime, but there's at least some type of mushrooms going on all year just from the fog grip.
Yeah. Fantastic. Yeah, that's important. Nature's air conditioning.
Then, with seasons, it's like, well, morels, we have the burn morels up here, or they're actually inland, right? After the fires every year, so after that fire and those burns, the morels are going to pop up, right?
Wow, yeah.
People kind of chase those fires.
Chase the fire, the burn scars. Yeah, get your burn morels. For firewood.
So that's like a season, right? That like comes earlier in the year, like spring. I actually got to go to Shasta this year for the first time to do some mushroom hunting.
Nice.
And there's a mushroom festival on, I think it's Memorial Day weekend out there every year, called the McLeod Mushroom Festival. And I got to hunt for these boletes called butter boletes. And that was my first time seeing those. So that was pretty cool. So that's like another spring season that's like inland. But then, like right now is lobsters, chanterelles are popping. And then, I'm really excited about those boletes we were talking about.
Yeah.
Those come a little bit later. And then the amanitas and all that. We have some amanitas that always seem to be around, but the muscarias, those Mario mushrooms,
yeah,
those are going to start going off here in like another month or so, I think. So those are just fun. Like everybody loves finding the bright red amanita.
Yeah. The Mario mushroom is classic. It's so good. Well, thank you so much. We're right at the top of the hour. I want to give you the last word and give thanks. I learned a lot and I really appreciate you coming on. And that was a lot of fun. We should do this again and come to Santa Cruz. Come for a trip. Come,
yeah,
to the come to the mountains. Yeah, show me the ropes. Yes,
I appreciate the opportunity. I just want to shout out to everyone that's like given me the opportunity or believed in what I'm doing, that gave me the time of day. Thanks for having me on, and I hope everyone can be encouraged to go learn about mushrooms. Don't be scared of them. Have fun with them. Don't take it seriously, right?
Yeah.
Go start collecting some mushrooms and then bring them home and figure out what they are, you know?
Yes. Give thanks, Santa Cruz. Have a beautiful weekend. Stay hydrated. Take care of each other. And tune in next week for more Cannabis Connection. Big ups.